Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is Tanya Maria with ColoredPeople.net, and we have with us Onaji Allen Gunns. And what you heard was Rising to the Occasion, which is part of his newest release, Blood Life Solo Piano Improvisations, which we'll talk about tonight. And just a little bit about Onaji. He was born in Harlem, raised in Queens, and he started playing the piano at age 7. And Onaji is Nigerian for the Sensitive One, and his career spans for over 4 decades. And today, he is a sought-after arranger, producer, composer, and educator. And it's an honor to have him with us tonight. And without further ado, I present to you Mr. Onaji. Hello.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Very happy to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We're very happy to have you. You've been a supporter of our community for so long, and finally we have you here with us tonight, and we're very excited to talk about your life and your career. So thank you again
okay.
for your time. I know it's a Sunday.
You're welcome.
So thank you so
right,
much.
Right, Sunday. Day of rest.
Yes, but we're resting with your beautiful music, and we're sharing it with the world and our listeners.
Thank you.
And
thank you
I'd like
much.
To thank you. And I'd like to share our phone number, should anybody would like to call in and say hello. The number to call is 949-209-2956. Again, 949-209-2956. And if you'd like to visit Onaji's website, not if, but when you're ready to visit, it's Onaji, O-N-A-J-E, Allen, A-L-L-A-N, Gums, G-U-M, B as in Bravo, S.com. All right, Onaji, I usually start talking about your early years. At age seven, started playing the piano. We'd like to know, who were your inspirations, your motivators, aside from your parents? Who do you have to give credit for your the beginning of your career in your inspiration?
Well, actually,
and your talent?
My music teacher, who was also the organist for the church, because we moved from Harlem to St. Albans, Queens, and that was the, of course, the time of the mass migration. So black families moving into Queens was not something that was done a lot. So we're on a block where there were, in a neighborhood, as a matter of fact, where there were very few black families. So my first teacher on the recommendation or the pushing, not pushing, but my mother was very instrumental in me starting piano. And we found the teacher in the neighborhood and the church in the same neighborhood, and one and the same. And I started playing, and I had lessons with her for 10 years from the time I started till I was 17 years old and ready to take the plunge into college, where I went to school at Fredonia State University. So at that point, that's when our paths, you know, parted, and I continued in college my piano lessons.
That is wonderful. Now, what happened with your interest to for the piano, for that particular instrument? How did that happen?
Well, that was something that my mother actually started, because she tried to get my sister to take piano lessons, and that didn't go too well because she had a teacher who smacked the knuckles, you know. So she got, and then my brother wasn't able to take lessons when he was born, so I was the last one. And actually, at three, I was singing this old Eddie Fisher song called "Oh My Papa" around the house at 3 years old. So even then, they felt, I think, that I had some kind of musical aptitude. So when we finally moved to Queens, she insisted that I take lessons. So that's how I got started on the piano.
That
I really didn't show interest in anything else other than, you know, piano and voice, I guess.
That is wonderful. Now, fast forwarding, you, in 1971, you had a gig with master guitarist Kenny Burrell. And
Well, that came about from, I would say, like my first mentor, who was Leroy Kirkland. He was the father of a classmate of Music and Art High School. And they lived actually down the block from Music and Art. And one day, Skip suggested that I meet his father. And his father, Leroy Kirkland, was a guitarist who played with the Erskine Hawkins Band. He's also the co-composer of Cloudburst, that was done by Manhattan Transfer and other vocal groups. And he was also a big R&B conductor at that time and arranger for people like Ruby and the Romantics, who did Our Day Will Come. That was Mr. Kirkland's arrangement and production. So I met Mr. Kirkland, and through him, he introduced me to Kenny Burrell, because he had gotten Kenny on many dates when Kenny moved to New York from Detroit. So I gave him some music to listen to from a compositional and arranging standpoint, not from playing. And the next day, after I gave him the tapes, he called my parents home and said, left a message, my mother. And when I got home, my mother said, Kenny Burrell just called you. And he told me he was going to call me like in 5 days, but he called me the very next day. And when I called him back, he said, "You want a gig?" And that was the gig in Baker's Keyboard Lounge in Detroit.
That's awesome. Now, we're talking to Onaji, and the number to call is 949-209-2956. And you're listening to coloredpeople.net, a multicultural artistic network. You can visit us at coloredpeople.net. We're also on Facebook, but you can get all the information through coloredpeople.net. And, of course, onajiallengums.com. You can also find information on our coloredpeople.net website. Onaji, now,
yes.
Your 2 years with Woody Shaw, which led to one of your signature arrangements, Rosewood, tell
mm-hmm.
us about that experience with great trumpeter Woody Shaw.
Well, to be honest, I almost didn't go to Woody Shaw's band because during that time there were things that were happening with some musicians, and I really was kind of skeptical to join the band. But I asked him who was in the band. He said Carter Jefferson, Victor Lewis, and Clint Houston. Then I said, "Okay, I'm in." You know, that's why I got to Woody's band, because I played a lot with Victor, mm-hmm. myself, and Buster Williams. And Carter did a lot of work with Norman Connors, who I did work with previously. And I knew Clint Houston, and he was like a wonderful bass player. So I knew I was in good hands. So he mentioned those mm-hmm. three people. I said, "We can do this," you know, kind of attitude. And like I spent almost 2 years with that ensemble.
What did you get from that experience?
What I got from the experience? Well, I understood how meticulous Woody was in putting a set together. And we never did the same thing twice, but he always knew what tunes to do on a particular set. And I watched that. He talked to the audience, unlike some people, which I already learned with Woody Shaw. I mean, with Nat Adderley.
Right.
How he took the audience, which came from his brother Cannonball, very seriously, and felt that they needed to know the journey we were taking musically, because we were playing primarily instrumental music. So Woody did the same thing, not as much, but he did the same thing where he talked to the audience and let them know what was happening. So the aspect of the audience involvement with the music, the act of the set list being very meticulously put together, I also learned what I wouldn't do if I was had my own band. I learned a lot about what I would do and what I wouldn't do with the band. One thing is that I learned that the audience being very important, that when someone comes to you to get your autograph or just to say, hey, that we owe them that time, because they can be doing something else at that very moment.
Right.
And they decide to put you into their scheme of things. That is something I feel is very important to do, because we don't know what kind of effect those few moments may have on that person.
Right.
You see, so I feel it's very important to have the most positive influence you can have on a person, especially if you don't know them and don't know their history. And they say, they come to you and they say, like, to have your autograph or like you to do anything. You know, it's always a pleasure to do that.
Yes, and I've seen that in your performances, how you do engage the audience and you do talk to them and bring them in to, you know, not only through your music, but through dialogue. So that's beautiful that you took that with you.
Yeah, I learned a lot of that from Nat Adderley when we were in his band, which was previous to Woody Shaw.
Yes. You also, we had recently Carmen Lundy, and she talked about the time that you spent in her trio, and I got her perspective. Now I'd like to get your perspective from the experience you had working
with
her.
Well, my first recollection of Carmen was when she met with George Butler, who was at CBS at that time. And I think I had a meeting with George Butler, and Carmen came in at that same time, and we struck a conversation. And what I loved about Carmen was that she would come prepared. She kind of spoiled me for a lot of singers because she would come prepared to a rehearsal with her own charts that she wrote out herself, with the melody line written out and the chords even written out. But she was still open enough that if I had an idea harmonically or whatever to put into the tune, she was very accepting of that. Okay, so she made it kind of difficult for me to deal with other singers because she was so prepared with her work, okay, that she kind of spoiled me for other singers.
I understand. Now, your arrangement of Phyllis Hyman's Betcha by Golly Wow,
yes.
How much freedom did you have with that? Because obviously that is a major hit and
I
a
had
wonderful
total,
arrangement.
I had total freedom. Thank you very much. But what's interesting is that I was arranging that song before I knew who Phyllis Hyman was. See, Gene Karn was supposed to sing that song. But Gene got signed to Philly International. So that put her out of the running to do the song. And actually, I was looking at ideas that were already out there because I like to look at what other people are doing. So as it happened, the arrangement I think that was done for Freddie Hubbard. It was when he was on CTI. I think it was done by Bob James. It may have been done by John Sebastian. One or two of them, they had done that particular song. So I gathered ideas from the original and from that Freddie Hubbard recording of Betcha by Golly Wow. And I listened to it, and then I just put my stamp on it. And I had also started arranging it, thinking about Doug and Gene Karn. That kind of vibe they put out there. But then we had to customize it and change it when we decided to record it. Some of the horn parts I put in at the beginning were a little rough, you might say, for the final mix. So we took them out and left the flutes with the strings on that arrangement. But as far as freedom, I was given total freedom by Norman Connors.
Wonderful.
In doing that arrangement.
Wonderful. We are talking to Anaji. Of course, we will get to the wonderful Blood Life project that he released in 2013. We'll take a quick break. And I started out, as I mentioned, with Rising to the Occasion, which is one of his originals. And now I'm going to play Freedom of Spirit. And we'll be right back.
Thank you. I'm Alphonse Mouzon, drummer, composer, multi-instrumentalist, and CEO and chairman of TenaciousRecords.com. And I'm also a very proud member of ColoredPeople.net.
Panasonic chose his song "Dare to Dream" as its theme for their 10th anniversary celebration of Kid Witness News. Onaji Allen-Gums has composed, arranged, and performed the original score for the Showtime film Override, directed by actor and producer Danny Glover. And Onaji is also an NAACP Image Award nominee for Outstanding Jazz Artist for his album Remember Their Innocence. Onaji, I love Remember Their Innocence. It is so sweet.
Thank you. Thank you.
It is
thank
so
you.
Perfect. It's
yes,
what
you know,
was,
I wrote it
to
tribute to children, because I feel that as children, they understand a lot more than we give them credit for, and I feel that somehow we lose that sort of innocence as we get older based on the information that we're fed to regurgitate, not to really absorb, but to regurgitate at a later date. That's why you have adults saying, I don't understand jazz. I don't understand how to play this music or how to understand what it's saying. When as children, we're very much, we absorb so much. We're very open and very inquisitive about the music. So I want to do something to really be in tribute to the child in us as adults and the children themselves.
That is wonderful. The name Onaji, was that given to you? Or
no, it wasn't. When I was in college, I was told by a few classmates that I had a sensitive touch at the piano. And
indeed you do.
How I played. So I was in Buffalo, and I was in a center that I was working at, and there was a young man who had a book put together by Amir Baraka, which at that time was Leroy Jones. And he had a book of African names for, you know, adults to give their children. So I said, could I look at the book? So I took it from him. And I went through the pages and came across his name, Onaje, which meant the sensitive one. And I found it kind of quickly. So I felt that I needed some more time to give it, you know, time to marinate and everything. And I thought maybe look at other names. And I didn't find anything that fit. So I went back to Onaje, and I saw it, and I conquered, and I took I took the name on. And that was interesting because the same day, because, again, I told you I was in Buffalo, in a way I was challenged to whether I would keep that name, because two people that were my contemporaries, they were sitting at a table in this club called the Revelot Lounge, and they were making fun of the name. Said, I heard Onaji Allen got a new name called blah, 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 blah. So it led me to believe that maybe I should leave it alone, because my parents didn't know about this, and no one else knew except the people in Buffalo. So I had two choices, either drop the whole thing or keep the name, and in time, those same two gentlemen will call me Onaji out of respect. Now, one of the men is still in Buffalo. I don't know what he's doing. But the other gentleman, who's a musician, a well-known musician, he calls me Onaji out of respect. So that was a decision I had to make at that point. So I've had it since 1972, actually.
Yes, and one of your solo projects is named Onaji.
Yes.
76, I believe.
Yeah, 1976. Yes, you're correct. Of Steeplechase Records, yes.
Yes, and then just for the audience purposes, other solo projects of Onaji are That Special Part of Me, 1988, Dare to Dream, I love that name, 1991, Return to Form, 2003, Remember Their Innocence, of course, and you're on your own label, Ejano.
Yes.
2005, Sack Full of Dreams, 2007, which was Jazz Improv Magazine pick amongst best album of 2007. Congratulations. And
thank you.
Just Like Yesterday, 2010. And how was the connection with Override, writing the arrangement?
What happened is that a few years before that film, I knew Danny Glover. My wife and I had met him at the Apollo Theater, and we told him we were going to come to the West Coast. And my wife had made him a face pin, and I gave him a copy of That Special Part of Me as a cassette. So we called him, and when we got to the West Coast, and we hung out, and then I came back home, and he was doing a film called The Saint of Fort Washington. So in the film was Ving Rhames, who I recognized him from a TV show he was doing called The Men. And so I approached him with that information, and somehow we struck a friendship. And Ving called me and says, Danny's doing a movie. You should do the music. And I said, well,
of course.
I've never scored a movie. He said, so?
Oh, wow.
So he put me on the spot. So I called Danny because I knew him, and I talked to his secretary, and I said, I'd like to do the movie Danny's doing. So Danny called back a few days later and said, Onaje, I'd like you to do the music for this film. And
awesome.
His feeling was, it was his very first film as a director. And so he kind of just left it in my lap. And I had no real equipment to do this film. I had one TV with, and the movie comes to call a Synthi track, which is like a flutter sounding sound. And I'm watching the movie with this Synthi track going for the whole time. And usually when you do a film, you have two tracks. So I only had one track. And I wrote out some notes and made some entries. And it was a MIDI score because there wasn't that much money included in the budget. And I got a friend of mine who had access to a studio where I could actually put the music to the film. And so I did the whole film at the studio he had access to. And that was that. So that was like my first film. And I received the big thing is that I received a book from a young lady working at ASCAP in Los Angeles. And that book saved my life. It was called Listening to the Movies by the late Fred Collin, who was himself a film composer. And I learned so much about not just how to make film music, but also some stories, some anecdotes that a lot of the composers would relate in the book about their own experiences in doing film. And
gave you a wonderful
I got a lot from that book, and
yeah.
It left me a sense of easiness in doing the score because some things I was concerned about but was cleared up in the book. So I went ahead and did it, and he put it on the movie. I put the song on the soundtrack.
Wonderful. Now let's talk about Blood Life, solo piano improvisations based on the melodies of Ron Shannon Jackson. Now, your long-lasting friendship with Mr. Jackson, who sadly passed away 2013, last year?
Yes.
I believe. This is a beautiful story, how everything started in 1985 when he came to you with Lullaby for Mothers.
Yes.
And tell us the story and briefly and how it evolved to what it
What happened is Ron came to my house with a manuscript book. And in the manuscript book were different songs that he had written on the flute. So he was going to do this concept album with spoken word and drum solos and stuff like that. And he had this one song called Lullaby for Mothers. So he came up to my house and wondered what could I do with this song. So I just improvised what I felt. He had a very unorthodox way of notation, but somehow through the notation I was able to come up with something. And I had my back to him at the piano, and when I finished what I felt, what he presented to me, I turned around, he was crying. And then I did the session that he had called me for, the concept album. It was first called Pulse, and then I think it was called Taboo after that. And his producer asked him, because of how I did the one piece, he asked, well, would he like to do an entire album of your music? So he asked me, I said, well, sure. So he gave me the manuscript book that he first came to my house with, and I looked through it and picked the tunes that kind of spoke to me, that I felt I could do some justice. And I started, you know, working on the music, but it pretty much was an improvisatory piece. And we finished it and had like 9 songs we had picked and mixed and everything. And Ron was not at the session because he's actually out of town. So we picked those 9 tunes, mixed them and everything. And then as for some reason, which is not really clear at this point, although I got some ideas what happened, the session was shut down. And the producer took everything back to San Francisco. So for 20 years, from 1985. So for about 20-some years, there was nothing.
Wow.
And since I didn't own the music, I was waiting for Ron to take action of getting the music back or asking the producer, David Breskin, about the project. But nothing happened. So finally, I asked Ron for David's number. And I called David Breskin, and I asked him if – not. No, I didn't ask him. I told him. I told him I would like to get the music from that project. So I bought the rights to the music. He sent all the music to me, which at that time, because it was a beta, it was a 85, it was done on beta. So that's called, of course, his archaic use of recording. So a very good friend of mine named James P. Nichols, he was able to get the music converted into the computer, and he took it upon himself to be able to clean up some of the music. So it went from 9 performances to 14 performances. And in the journey, I end up finding those 3 pieces I named, Freedom of Spirit, Rise to the Occasion, and our inner voice. So these are pieces that I wrote that I didn't even know had on the project. So they were entered, plus with Lullaby I had like 2 versions that I really liked, so I put both versions on to kind of bookend the project. And I had 2 versions of Rising to the Occasion, so we put that on the project. And I decided to put it on my imprint of Ajano as a CD download, so the listeners can get the project via CD Baby and get it as a download, either a separate tunes, individual songs, or the entire project.
That's beautiful. It's one of my favorite songs, Lullaby for Mothers.
Thank you.
And let's take a listen. Lanaji Ellen Gums, the sensitive one, with us at coloredpeople.net. We'll be right back. Bravo. Beautiful. I just
thank
love
you.
That. That is
yes.
Awesome. Congratulations on your Downbeat magazine spread. That is so awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. This is past month, September, yes.
Yes. I've added that to our blog. Again, for those of you listening, you can just go to colorpeople.net and you can link to our blog. Excuse me, our Blog Talk Radio, our blog, where we feature all of our guests on our show. And as you heard, Onaji Blood Life can be found at CD Baby, of course, Amazon, and you can visit his website at onajiallengums.com. Now, Onaji, we will listen
yes.
to some more of this wonderful music, but I'd like to talk about how you give back to the community and you work with the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music in New York and, you know, all the work that you do as a mentor and as an educator. Share with us, please.
Well, with the New School, I'm kind of like an adjunct and I'm not on the actual staff. But on two occasions, two of the students were given a list of teachers they could have, and they chose me to be their teacher.
Okay.
And I was able to, unfortunately, I can't do a lot of lessons because they have lessons with their own teachers that they're assigned to. But that was very rewarding in dealing with these young people who have been playing for a while. And the first student I had, he didn't know how to play jazz. He didn't know how to conceptualize. He was a gospel player. And he said, I don't know how to play jazz. And I told him, well, think about somebody you love very much. And that happened to be his brother, who was sick at the time. And I said, I'm going to play this bass line on the piano, and I want you to play your impressions of your brother. Well, he did that and played one of the most incredible solos that I ever heard.
Wow.
And I told him, that's the spirit of the music, what you play. And, you know, the second pianist was actually a pianist from Cuba. And very good pianist. And I had some lessons with him, but unfortunately he didn't finish out at the school. But he's still doing well. I've come in contact with him at different occasions. I've also taught for at least 3 or 4 years at the Litchfield Jazz Camp.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. You're still teaching?
Yeah, which I got a chance to work with young people and work with some young musicians who are incredible. Because some of them are just starting, some of them are in the middle of their development, and some are very, very developed at a very young age. We had a pianist who was actually like 9 years old. We thought he was 12, but that's how old he had to be to get in. So that's what he put on his application. Come to find out, he was 9 years old, but he had incredible technique, you know. But I've had something to do with the harmonic concept, so I was able to teach him something. So I wasn't sure, no one was sure, what could we teach this young man? He already is a professional at 9 years old. But when I came up with some of the harmonic concepts, he was like, oh, okay. And he thanked me and told me I was very good. So I bowed to him and said, thank you so much. Thank you so much. you know, and, you know, but I'm doing something for a radio station this month for WBGO here in New York and stationed in New Jersey, and I will be teaching the young people about the conception and dealing with what they know as far as things like cartoons and using the alphabet and different things that I can relate to how they can really understand and appreciate jazz. And, you know, so I'm doing that October 11th. So if any of the listeners are in the Newark area, October 11th, they can get in touch with that. But if they're an adult, they have to bring a child. That's the only way they'll get in.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we'll connect on
Facebook. So you can't come
Facebook
by yourself unless you have a child with you.
It's usually the other way around. I like this kind
of thing. Right. It's the other way around, right? But this time, the child will get you in. Otherwise,
yes. You're
not ready.
Yes. Well, I will definitely post that on our Facebook page on facebook.com/coloredpeople.net. So I'll connect with you later on that.
Okay.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things you've done this year. There's your concert presentation, New Vintage.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, New Vintage. That was a concept I came up with because I felt there was too much compartmentalization in the presentation of the music itself. You know, you have R&B over here, you have spoken word over there, and straight ahead here, and contemporary here. Why not have a presentation where you actually put them all together?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, put straight ahead jazz with contemporary jazz, have a presentation with spoken word, with R&B, and actually realize that it's not so compartmentalized that people would like the different genres, just a matter of different tastes.
And
BAM
well.
In Brooklyn. So
right.
I did the very first New Vintage concert at a place called Mist Harlem, MIST, in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that went over okay. And then we took it to BAM in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Academy Music Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an incredible presentation because we had standing room only with so many people that couldn't get in, who were waiting
mm-hmm.
downstairs. Because one thing about BAM, they don't charge admission.
Mm-hmm.
So all these people came out to watch some incredible people do their thing. Some of the best poets, some of the best musicians, some of the best singers to play with me on this engagement. That was in 2013. Then in January of this year, I was asked to do it again, but not do it on one night, but do it on two nights. And again, I had standing room only both nights.
Awesome. That is wonderful. Are you going to continue that?
Yes, and actually I have a smaller contingent called Onaj Allen Gums Trio Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So in some venues, because there were about at least 17 people in the ensemble, including the
mm-hmm.
poets and the singers and the musicians. They even had dance included in there. So
yes.
We had a lot of people in a New Vintage presentation. So to scale it down a little bit, I call it Onaj Allen Gums Trio Plus. So the plus
mm-hmm.
would be like a singer or a poet, or two singers, or a poet and a singer, or a musician, saxophone. So that was presented, and it was presented very, very successfully. So, yes, I will continue those concepts.
Wonderful. We are pleased to have Onaji with us and his latest release, Blood Life, a collection of solo performances based on melodies composed by Ron Shannon Jackson. And we've been listening to some of this wonderful project. And tell us about the title song, Blood Life.
Blood Life. Okay, that was one of Ron's pieces. And as I mentioned, the title, it's a long title. The concept was based on melodies they wrote on flutes. So I just did a little reharmonization and a little rhythmic manipulation and did a reinterpretation of this music. And Blood Life being the title, I felt it was very striking. And it was also a piece that he did do live. At first. So when I thought about the kind of compositional titles that would really permeate the entire project, Blood Life mm-hmm. came to mind as the most potent title.
Yes, it is.
To name the piece, to name the actual project.
Yes. Let's take a listen to Blood Life. You're listening to coloredpeople.net, a multicultural artistic network. And we are with the wonderful arranger, composer, and pianist extraordinaire, Onaji Allen Gums. Here we are with Blood Life.
host and producer of Spotlight on Jazz and Poetry, and you are currently listening to ColorPeople.net, a multicultural artistic network.
We are back. This is Tanya Maria, your host of ColorPeople.net, and we have with us tonight, it is truly an honor to have Onaji Allen Gams as our guest and as a longtime member of our community. Onaji, it's
yes.
been wonderful to finally talk to you.
Thank
we've
you.
Been we've
right.
been talking through email and online for so
Facebook,
long.
Facebook, yes, right. yes.
What is in your future and things that you want to do that are in your heart that you hope to get done soon?
Well, my wife and I saw a very inspiring film called Keep On Keeping On, which is about Clark Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And he instilled the importance of working with young people in this film
mm-hmm.
and really inspiring mm-hmm. them. I want to be able to continue to do that. And I heard about a piece that Archie Shepp did with orchestra. And I'd like to get back, you know, what's old is new again, get back to some of the older pieces I did for larger ensembles and to let that be heard. And I'd like to do, at some point, do another solo project, maybe more of my own music, and to lend my keyboard skills to other artists in whatever genre that appeals to me, whether it's straight ahead, R&B, whatever. If it's good music, it's good music. And I don't try to differentiate one being better than the other. It's all about the heart and the expectation of the music to the listener.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm hoping to do and hoping to get on some of these festivals. There's some projects that have not been solidified, so I really can't talk about them right now. But there's some projects that should be very interesting, involving myself and some other pianists, and just some other venues that I can open up to. Even at this tender age of 65, I still can do a lot more to contribute, because Clark Terry is like 94, so he definitely was inspiration.
Yes.
Of what is yet to happen, what I can still do. So,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Looking to the past, looking to the present, and looking to the future at the same moment, same time.
Yes. You mentioned on the Downbeat magazine article that your mission is to heal.
Yes.
And your music is the ministry, and your music is healing. And
yes.
You know, the intent and the content of your music is life.
Yes.
So it's
yes.
beautiful.
Thank you, thank you. The intent and the
You're
content,
welcome.
I like that. Can I use that?
Of course.
I like that. The intent and the content.
I always talk about that because we talk
yes.
about, you
yes.
know, I talk about with my daughter, you know, I said there's nothing yeah. wrong with listening to music. There,
mm-hmm.
You know, there's not good music or bad music. I think what you need to look at is what is the intent and the content of that music.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right. Yes. 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 Yes.
All right, my dear.
I think
dear.
We should
Any
use the
closing?
Music to have more of a discussion with our children about the
yes.
music. You know, opening
yes.
up more discussions with our yes. young ones about the music.
Yes.
Okay.
Any closing thoughts? I'm gonna leave our listeners with "School," the appropriate tune to end with. But I'd like
okay.
to ask you for closing thoughts. Or words
well,
with
closing
you, the closing
thoughts.
Thought,
I think
perhaps.
Is closing thoughts really to open our ears and open our hearts to good music, to music that where we can understand the intent and the content of the music and use the music as a source of healing
yes.
that is already proven, and to really bring the music to the front as opposed to always being background. Bring it to the front of the stage and really celebrate it. Celebrate the music.
That's right, our God-given gift. So let's use it to good use, to be a blessing to others, and not to tear it down, but to build it up. In such a dark world that we live in today, it's a blessing to know you.
The music can brighten it up.
Yes. Well, my regards to your wife. And
thank you.
I look forward to having you back on our show to talk about future projects.
Totally, you know.
And
totally open to that.
On your thank you. I appreciate your time. And congratulations on your accomplishments, the past, present, and future.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Onaji. Thank you, everyone.
Okay.
We'll leave you with School by Onaji Alangum from the album Blood Life. Good night, everybody.